Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of the broadcast. A pair of experts on the gig economy say they overestimated the impact of how people were making a living doing various jobs like driving for Uber and how that would affect the traditional work arrangements that most of us have. Joining us this morning to talk about this is Josh Zumbrunn from the Wall Street Journal, where this story appears. Josh, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Pleasure to have you, because I know we have been following not only Wall Street Journal's reporting on this over the years, but this story in general. A lot was made over the gig economy back in 2015 and earlier than that. How did these experts get it wrong, and how significantly?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a really interesting topic. I mean, back in 2015, that was the year that Uber was first valued more than General Motors or valued more than Ford. And so it kind of exemplified how big people thought the gig economy was getting. And, you know, what's kind of turned out to be the case is that Uber was a real phenomenon. There's a lot of people that drive for Uber. It's a big service that a lot of people use. But most of the other things in the gig economy, especially when it comes to things that people, you know, take hours out of their day to go work on these kinds of web platforms, turns out were, for the most part, very, very small. And so kind of two things are what happened. I mean, one is that there was one company that was really growing in a big way in this space. And that's still there in the numbers. I mean, there's no doubt there's a little bit more of this activity, this kind of gig work, than there was 15 years ago or something like that. But the other reason is that, you know, back in 2014, 2015, earlier this decade, the labor market was still a lot weaker. And so some of the things that looked like people shifting to the gig economy were actually just people trying to cope with the labor market because it was still so damaged from the recession that started in 2007. And that's kind of one of the big takeaways here, is that some of the things that looked like people worried that the economy was kind of shifting this way in a really permanent way. In fact, you know, people were temporarily doing some things to make ends meet. It wasn't a permanent shift in the way the labor market worked.
These two experts, Alan Krueger of Princeton and Lawrence Katz of Harvard, how did they realize that they perhaps had something wrong here? Was it that when the job market, as you've described it, started improving and they saw that people were not doing these gig jobs anymore, or how did they realize that they were off?
Yeah, well, one of the big reasons that this was such a mystery is the Labor Department, who typically, you know, they're the ones that produce the monthly jobs report that everyone uses to kind of gauge how the economy is doing. The traditional monthly jobs report didn't ask questions about kind of alternative work arrangements. It asked if you had a job, but it didn't ask kind of the nature of how that job was structured. Now, the Labor Department used to do a special set of surveys on exactly that question. But starting in 2005, the Labor Department kept requesting it, but Congress wouldn't give them funding to study the issue. And that was exactly kind of the period when, one, the economy got really weak. Again, the recession kind of started in 07. The labor market was really weak for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, a really unusual period in U.S. history. That was exactly when the Labor Department stopped studying the question. And that was exactly the moment that, you know, some companies did have, especially Uber, had real success. And so there was kind of this black hole right when this happened. And so Krueger and Katz were two of the economists. They're both really well-regarded economists who had stepped in and tried to do surveys of their own. And eventually what happened is Congress kind of saw how important this question was. In 2017, they went out and the Labor Department was able to kind of use some other money that it had to do a new version of the survey. They were able to get the survey done. And that kind of showed, once they were able to do the comprehensive survey, that these really high estimates were wrong. And so Kruger and Katz are kind of reckoning with how that data, once it was finally collected, didn't come out the way that people had expected.
And so, Josh, now we're in a situation where the job market is so hot that it may be hard to tell again, but a lot of the folks who had gig jobs back then have now gone on to full-time employment. Is that a fair assessment of how things have kind of panned out?
That's exactly right. I mean, people thought that this is maybe a permanent shift in the labor market, that we were going to go toward a future where every company, every occupation, no matter what it was, you were going to work through an app. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think now, but 5 years ago, people were writing think pieces saying that that's what was going to happen. But, once the economy's good, when people have the opportunity to find full-time work, that's the direction they want to go. When companies kind of have the ability to offer people a full-time job, that kind of gets them better, more stable employees. That benefits the company, too. So this idea that even when the economy is good, people are going to work this way, just not the case.
Is there a sense of how many people are doing these gig jobs nowadays? Can we put a percentage on the number of people who have jobs in the gig economy?
There's a lot of different ways that you might want to define it. If you're talking about people who kind of actually get a significant share of their income from going on an app, working an hour or two at a time whenever there's demand available for small gigs, that was kind of the original idea of the gig economy. That's exactly what Uber and the other driving apps do. There's also food delivery ones. If you look at those, and again, there has been growth here, but you're talking about maybe 1 or 2% of the labor market. So that's several million people. It's not nothing. But but earlier this decade, people were thinking that maybe it was 20, 30, 40%. And then there's a couple broader categories. You can think of like the number of people that are independent contractors, that are on call, that are temp workers. When you take in all those kinds of things, it ends up being around 13% or something like that. And so again, that's not nothing, but it's not taking over the labor force. And in fact, there were always independent contractors, people who were on call. There were always home contractors, repairmen who kind of worked one job at a time. So not all this activity is completely new. And the growth in it, you're talking 1 or 2 percentage points. It's happened, but it's not completely changed the U.S. labor market.
You mentioned something earlier that I think is another kind of offshoot of this that was created by this wrong data, and that was the evaluation of at Uber. Were there other companies that were impacted perhaps positively then by this estimate and now negatively now, seeing some of their capital or perhaps their valuation significantly or even somewhat decrease after these estimates kind of shook out?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it really, because this seemed like it might be a plausible thesis, you had companies in San Francisco, especially Silicon Valley, who were trying to become, the Uber for everything, the Uber for dog walking, the Uber for doing your laundry, the Uber for washing your car. The reality is that there was Uber, and then the other companies, they just didn't take off at the same scale. Uber's main competitor, Lyft, is the same basic idea. You use the app to get drivers. It's thought to be around, less than one-fifth or something, the size of Uber. Some of the food delivery apps people do use on a pretty regular basis, but you're still talking a fraction of the size of Uber. And then, some of these other ideas of, the Uber for TV delivery. I mean, I don't want to get into the specific financials of companies you might know the name of because I don't know exactly how they're doing. But, the Uber for all these other topics, most of these never really took off at all.
Yeah, and some of these companies, I mean, one of the ones I think about is TaskRabbit for contractors and people doing repair work. That's another one. They're not public companies, so it's really hard to know exactly how they've been impacted.
Yeah, and I think some people certainly work on them. But, the idea that, like, most people are going to spend most of their day on an app like TaskRabbit, I mean, that was just clearly exaggerated. I mean, people do use these things, and people do put put their labor on there. I mean, yeah, but with something like TaskRabbit, you know, you can do things like you can do things that contractors would have done, and you're just finding them on TaskRabbit instead of in the yellow pages. And so, when you're talking about that kind of activity, you're not actually talking about as big of a change in the labor market. So some of these apps, you know, really are getting use, and these sites are really getting use, but they're not actually changing things. They're just kind of a new intermediation for the way that people in some industries always worked.
What's the takeaway here? What's the lesson that we learn is not to take some of these pronouncements at face value and do a little bit more of our homework before we believe them?
Yeah, I mean, this is just an example of kind of the hype machine getting carried away. I mean, I think one of the big lessons is to kind of ask yourself if all the people who are talking about a topic are trying to raise money. You know, I mean, that was the case with the gig economy, is that part of the reason there was so much hype about it is that because all the promoters of it were people who were trying to raise money on the basis that it was a really big trend. And that should have raised a little bit more of a red flag if the only people talking about it, Adaya, are trying to raise money off it. You kind of think of Bitcoin last year as being a very similar phenomenon, where people who were very enthusiastic about it were also people who were trying to get very, very rich off the idea. That's a little bit of a red flag in terms of what their incentives were.
Definitely. Well, Josh, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Great conversation. Come back and join us sometime.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Josh Zumbrun is with the Wall Street Journal, and we're going to link out to his story on this about the gig economy in the podcast of the Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.